at 6 o'clock.
Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning of September, you'll find daughter.
Okay, that was the wrong opening. Oh, jeez. Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's Labor Day weekend. We don't care. You can do whatever you want.
it's a holiday weekend. It's really quite true. This is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell of Saturday Afternoon Post. And
hi, everybody.
And it's the Labor Day weekend of 2012. And in a moment, we have Jack is going to give us a few fine points on why the salt of the earth and labor unions and labor are so important to us as a culture, not just as a holiday to celebrate. But I am going to get this opening in here, okay?
Yeah, good. Let's do it.
I'll play it from my iTunes. Couple more seconds to it, but you get the drift.
Yeah, well, that was toe-tappingly nice. Very nice, Gwen.
You're so fine. It'll probably
very funky.
It'll probably sound better when I upload it. Anyways, this is Labor Day weekend. Today's guest is Julia Trigg Crawford. She'll be with us in a few minutes. I have to call her into this show. But Jack, you posted this week about Labor Day. Why don't
It'll appear tomorrow's post on Labor Day on the Saturday Afternoon Post, all in capitals, by the way, the Saturday Afternoon Post. And what it is a tribute to American laborers, and actually laborers the world over. The past, you know, decade, you know, 30 years, but really the past decade and especially workers have just been getting pounded. I mean, on the labor front, their unions have all but been destroyed. That destroys their ability to collectively bargain effectively. Scott Walker did a number on the Wisconsin State Union, and across the board, they've been taking it in the shorts for a very long time. And you know what? It's time for this stuff to end. You know, it's labor unions, everybody likes to poo-poo them nowadays. I'm sorry. They were the reason that the middle class came about. And in this country, they were very instrumental in creating the middle class because they guaranteed people livable wages, a lot of benefits that they never had before the unions ever came into being, and they are still relevant and still needed today. And I hate to see them recede any further. I'd like to see a resurgence in labor unions. Now, granted, there's been some corruption and that sort of thing, too, but, which has been their downfall. But by and large, they have provided a great, great benefit for American workers, even people who weren't part of the labor union movement or part of labor unions to begin with, benefited as a result of the presence of labor unions. People need to remember that, and you need to keep that in mind the next time you're making fun of labor unions or thinking that you're too good to be in one. That's insane.
There's several points. I mean, workplace safety, the child labor laws, the 40-hour work week, the benefits that people enjoy from corporations. These are all part of what labor unions and the labor wobbly has brought to us. And they really do. We do need to remember the salt of the earth. That's
we sure do. And here's a tip of the hat to everybody who labors in this country. I'm not talking about business owners. Everybody's gotten all this sacred notion of business owners all of a sudden because Mitt Romney's made a big deal out of it. But I'll tell you what, it's the laborers who keep his businesses afloat, not him. And it's the laborers who produce the goods and the products and the services that are sold to create rich stockholders and benefit the business owners. So everybody has a part. Business owners are important, of course, but so is the federal government. And that's been batted around lately, too, by the Republicans. You know, it is a fact that the federal government is responsible in conjunction with labor and business originators into the startup and success of businesses. You know, you need federal-made highways to transport your goods. You need safety standards that are imposed by and regulations that are imposed by the federal government for the benefit of all. You need all these things that are they're government-sponsored, and the public school system helps educate workers and train workers. I mean, anybody who wants to deny the fact that the federal government has no say in the economy, they're out to lunch completely. So, but
well,
laborers,
I think that people mostly know that. I think what it is with corporatists is that they want to own labor. They don't want to give labor anything. They want to own labor.
They want to dictate everything. That's right.
They're
no different today than they were in the 1920s before labor unions came into prominence.
They aren't any
different. They're crazy.
I hear you. Well, here's to the labor and
yes.
Happy
everybody
labor
who works for a living. You know, anybody who goes to the office or sweeps floors or flips burgers. We make fun of burger flippers. I'm sorry. There's millions of jobs out there that are important. The reason that they're there is because people need them. You need burger flippers. They're a vital part of the burger industry.
And these trades and off trades on the job training trades are the ones that are going to actually supply most of the jobs if we are still under corporatist rule here.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know, there's something to be said about that, too. But it is actually, I'm going to give a ring out right now to our guest. We're calling
her. Oh, here we go. Great.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello.
Julia?
Yes.
Hello? Julia, are you hearing me?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
You bet.
You're coming in loud and clear. Jack and I are with you, and welcome to the Sunday show.
Thank you. Hi, Jack. Hi, Gwen. How are y'all both?
Yeah, hi. We're doing fine, and we hope you are, too. We need to be brought into the latest developments about the case that you've been trying to win, and, you know, this is your chance to keep us all and the listeners all informed as to what you've been up to.
Good. A lot has transpired since last I talked to you guys, I don't know, 6 weeks ago or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too long ago. I saw the article in the Times, and I know you've been to court. If you would like to, give us a little brief background, and then tell us what's cooking, and a happy Labor Day to all of you out there in Texas, too.
Well, thank you. Same to y'all from your respective calling places. Well, in a nutshell, TransCanada 3 or 4 years ago said they wanted to put their pipeline across our place here in northeast Texas, and my father, who was farm manager at the time, said, can you find another route and not come across us? The other pipelines that have asked, when we've requested they find another route, they did. But TransCanada said, no, we want to come across your place. So when it came down to here in Texas we call it the Fisher Cut Bait letter, TransCanada said either sign this easement or we're going to take your land through eminent domain because we have the power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't believe that a foreign corporation that didn't yet have all its permits that was transporting something that had never come across Texas before should really have the power to take our land. So we appealed the condemnation of our land. And over the course of the last, oh my goodness, we've been in court since February, actually earlier than that, but have been making our case against TransCanada that they do not qualify as a common carrier, which is the designation we give an entity in Texas who can take land for the public good. So we actually, it came down to a pretrial hearing on August the 22nd, a couple weeks ago, and a long, drawn-out court case, room full of people, lots of press, and this is in a little bitty county court at law courtroom. And in the end, Judge Harris ruled against us, and he ruled that TransCanada is a common carrier. They do have the right of eminent domain, and they can take our land. And then he then went so far as to give them what they call a writ of possession.
Oh.
So that was really just fight number one, because we are appealing that ruling.
Good.
And we will be moving up the food chain to the appeals court here pretty soon.
Good, good. Well, we wish you the very best in that fight, and we hope you take it as far as it needs to go to win your case. That's outrageous what they're trying to do here.
Well, that's what we believe.
Yes.
How does the judge and the state of Texas, who supports the judge, substantiate the fact that it's everything you laid out about it not even having its okay or paperwork and it being a non-national company? Not an American company. Well, I don't want to sound like I'm being American. I don't understand how they can secede your right as a landowner and citizen of the United States at this point. I mean, how do they substantiate it?
Well, what's interesting, Gwen, is substantiation was not part of the picture. If y'all followed the story, you know, we knew that we would hear from the judge probably via an email, and that would be an email sent to the attorneys on both sides. It turned out to be an email sent from the judge from his iPhone that was a sum total of 15 words. And it says, "My ruling is as follows. TransCanada's MSJ, which stands for Motion for Summary Judgment, is granted. TransCanada's NEMSJ is granted. That stands for non-evidence motion for summary judgment is granted. And then Crawford's plea of the jurisdiction is denied." So 15 words, and then it said, "sent from my iPhone." So this is a court case that was months in the making, thousands of pages of documents, expert witnesses, probably 10 or 12 depositions. I mean, international exposure. And I don't know why.
He had his mind made up to begin with.
You know, I don't know. Perhaps I don't know. And
How could he just dismiss it in 15 words? That isn't even proper protocol. I don't think that's ridiculous.
Well, and what's even more interesting, Jack, is that I found out about it from the press. The judge had blind copied at least one member of the press. And they called me, or the ruling was sent out at 7:47 at night. You know, at the end of the day, you think, okay, nothing's going to happen today. So with my attorney and I were all both going about, you know, things you do when you're not expecting an email. So I think she was off getting her little boy ready for school, and I was doing something else. And the phone rang here at the house, and it was a member of the press, and they said, "We'd like to get your reaction to the ruling." I said, "What ruling?" They said, "The one that came out at 7:47. I said, "I haven't seen it. Will you send me a copy?" And it appears that the judge blind copied at least one member of the press, so sent it to them, but hid their name from anybody else on the distribution list. So that just kind of threw some salt in the wound.
That's another uncalled for action. That judge ought to be recalled, is what I think.
It's unethical. It's unethical. Ethics are not part of what's going on in the country right now overall.
That's for sure.
You know, I don't want to drag all that in, but I do wonder, when I ask about substantiation, and I know what you've been through, I've been following, I don't understand what maybe I had better ask you, Julia, is, and I know it's tricky for you because you have so much you have to face yet, but it begs the question, is this judge, you know, is he got stock, or, I mean, why would he proceed the way he did without...
You know, I don't know. I can't, you know, I understand that Judge Harris is a good man, and he is a kind of, if you kind of think about this, this man is in his second year of a new job. He's the county court at law judge in a little bitty county in Texas, you know, northeast Texas, And the magnitude of this case was probably far beyond what he ever thought he would have in his court. So I'm sure it was overwhelming. So I want to cut the guy some slack. I'm sure it was overwhelming. Probably nothing he wanted to have on his resume. Mm-hmm. Oddly, though, from my perspective, how many county judges get a chance to make a decision that is this important and this critical? So there's two sides to that. But I can see how this was overwhelming. It's like drinking from a fire hose, perhaps, for this judge. And let me tell you why, and I have not seen anything else where he had to substantiate why he ruled the way he did, why it came down to 15 words, why it was so short and sweet. But in Texas, a lot of the basis of our position was the process in Texas to be permitted and to get the classification of a common carrier is a rubber stamp. It goes through something called the Texas Railroad Commission. Oddly enough, the Texas Railroad Commission is the entity in Texas that controls the pipelines. And basically, if you walk in that door, ask for a form called a T4 form, they give it to you, and you get to check off one of two boxes. Are you a common carrier, meaning are you building this pipeline so lots of people can put their stuff in it? Or are you building it for your own good, a private pipeline? And you get to check whichever box you want to be classified as, and then there is no follow-up. No one comes along and says, wait a minute, we want you to prove that you are building a pipeline where you're going to allow other companies to put their oil in your pipeline. And, you know, you will have a published tariff, and it's going to be non-discriminatory, and anybody can get on your pipeline. So what's happened is, because there is no governing body, no agency in Texas that says, show me your paperwork and prove it, that burden has fallen on me, a farmer. And there's this circle of not my job in Texas, in that no one claims responsibility for validating that a company has the right of eminent domain. So it's this hot potato of responsibility. So if the judge is saying they are a common carrier, it's because the state rubber stamps absolutely everybody who wants to be a common carrier. So part of the problem is the process. And since I've talked to y'all, I have been to Austin twice to our state legislature, once as an invited guest and once just as a, you know, public John Q. citizen wanting to speak. And I've been asked to talk about this to our House of Representatives, a couple of special committees, and they acknowledge something's wrong with the system.
Yeah.
If it's a rubber
stamp.
Well,
that's good. That's good on it. Small scale.
Only
if it leads to something very beneficial.
I hope so too, Jack. I do, because if the laws are wrong, and if what's being used against me in court is a set of laws that are wrong or incorrect, then maybe I can work on the other side. It won't help my case because laws are years in the making.
Right.
But I'm not doing this just for me and my family. There's got to be a better solution so that someone down the road doesn't have to go through this.
Julia, no one thinks you are. I have to say, with your explanation, it sounds as though the judge may have just kicked the can down the road so that he wouldn't, you know, he obviously realized that there would be an appeal if he rubber stamped it himself.
Yeah, that may be it, because
it was probably too big for him, and he didn't know how to handle it, so he just took the easy way out, is the way it looks.
Well, I think there was probably an appeal in the making no matter what happened, guys, because if we had prevailed, and we thought we had a strong enough case to prevail, if we had won, TransCanada would have appealed, and we, you know, with TransCanada winning, we were going to appeal, because the next step up the food chain is the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in a town called Texarkana, much bigger town, and this is a panel of three experienced judges who deal with cases of this magnitude and this visibility. And I think they're well-equipped to listen and assess and be unswayed by the pressure and be more laser-focused on the issues. So we actually feel very good about our position.
I hope at least two of them side with you.
I hope we get all three.
I do, too. I do, too. But
so
in the absence of that, we'll settle for two.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great.
You've gathered quite a cheering section all over the country and through many groups, a lot of environmental groups especially.
Mm-hmm.
What's the journey like, Julia? Tell us.
It has been fascinating. And, you know, I am not a political animal. I am so apolitical, it's almost embarrassing, because to me, you do what's right, not because of what your voter registration card says or what the color,
yeah.
You know, this is about property rights. This is not
right.
A political issue for me. There are environmental aspects that are very important to me, but what
yeah.
resonates with my family and I is property
economic,
rights.
It's your economic well-being. It's your economic rights.
It is, and it's pretty, it's, you know, when you get down to the constitutional right of property, you know, it's pretty hard to argue with that. You know, our family's been in this county since the 1850s. My grandfather bought this land in 1948, and
that's the evils of eminent domain. It is such a bizarre notion to begin with, that somebody can just swoop in and kick everybody else out for their own benefit. Oh, for the public good. The public good or for private good? That's the real question.
Well, and you know, Jack, I'm not saying I'm against every eminent domain case. If we were sure a little city had water or a hospital was built or something, that's
sure.
different. But when you really kind of peel away the pieces of this, it appears corporation, just coming through our state to get their product somewhere else. And there has been a very good analogy to this. Consider this like a toll road. Okay, some people
mm-hmm.
don't like land being taken for toll roads, but you can at least choose to get on a toll road and use it. This
mm-hmm.
is like, because there are no on-ramps anywhere in Texas for this pipeline, that you can't put product
right
in the pipeline.
It's
yeah,
right
and it's like a toll road where you can only get on in one place, and that's in
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma. And you
yeah.
can only get off in Houston. So they're just
yeah.
passing across my place. They're just
sure,
passing across
exactly.
my place. But back to Gwen's question about the incredible support that we're surrounded by. It's
yeah.
environmentalists. It is Tea Partiers. It is occupiers. It's people
wow.
that are involved in these unbelievable blockades that are going on for the pipeline. And you said national. This is international. When the piece ran in the New York Times that Gwen saw, I started getting donations from all over the world, because we're
great.
Running this whole thing on donated money. And I'm getting $20 from a soldier in Germany saying, "You're fighting all of us," or a guy in England saying, "I'm glad we don't have those problems in England, but here's $50 for your fight." And
oh, how wonderful.
A lot of Canadians too.
Yeah, that's outstanding.
Naomi Klein mentioned your case in an interview that I saw off YouTube just the other day.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, she's
Naomi,
on top of things, man.
Naomi Klein actually put out, and I think I uploaded it to play, and she's a Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
She put out a piece, and Julia, listen to what she has to say. This is pretty cool. It's about ethical oil.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you something. We don't have ethical oil in Canada. We have tar sands oil, which is like regular oil, but a whole lot dirtier. It ravages the earth as it is extracted, ravaging bodies, ravaging the land, and it also threatens the earth when it is transported in pipelines like the proposed Keystone XL pipeline. It threatens waterways, drinking supplies, ranches, the land that people and animals depend on. The vast majority of Canadians care deeply about climate change. They show it with their actions, but it doesn't matter because of the tar sands, because it undoes all of the actions that we do as individuals, because our national emissions are still up 30% from the time we signed the Kyoto Protocol, and all that time we've made a mockery of that agreement and a mockery of international law. So here's the other thing they're telling us. They're telling us that this will create jobs, and how dare we stand in the way of jobs during an economic crisis. We know that the same economic logic that puts greed above all and liberates corporations, that same economic model that is threatening to crash the global climate system, is exactly what crashed the global economic system, which is why we don't have enough jobs. So because we can't appeal to them, we need a strategy to strangle the tar sands from the outside. We need to cut off the arteries that are fueling this monstrosity. First and foremost, the Keystone XL pipeline, which will never be built if we have anything to say about it. We know that we can do better, that we do not have to attack our earth with ever greater violence in order to live happily and fulfilled. We know that there are energy sources based on renewing and amplifying life, not sucking the dry. Let us labor with all our hearts for this new day.
Three cheers for Naomi Klein.
Well, that's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, and she made that video, and she's been questioned on a few places about it, and I think it was on RT, Russian television. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, but I will get you a copy of that on your Facebook page. She spoke that, you know, there's a case in Texas, a lady is standing up to it, and, you know, there's many people
wow.
involved in a fight that, you know, it's not ethical, you know, what is going on from the very beginning of the XL pipeline. The
right.
tar sands oil extraction and processing isn't even good business.
No. Well, they try to minimize that, and they try to obfuscate everything, and they try to relate it to job creation. They vastly, greatly overstate the amount of jobs that would result from the pipeline going through. They lie every step of the way. It's just a bad situation for everybody, except the few people that own stock in or own the actual oil companies up in Canada that are doing this stuff.
As the heat on this issue has gotten hotter, I'm thinking back, you know, to over a year ago, the job numbers started creeping up. I mean, as the pressure and the microscope got more, the jobs were, you know, 5,000 to 6,000. Then it went to tens of thousands. And then we had some of our U.S. representatives saying hundreds of thousands of jobs. I mean, it just got ridiculously
high. Hey, we'll all be working
high.
For them before long. What a bunch of...
Oh, not me. I'd rather be unemployed. I'd rather be unemployed than ever
unemployed.
Working for them.
Exactly right. I agree.
That is kind of funny. I mean,
it is crazy.
It's a little loopy and loony. And it's also strange too. The people who were, you know, there was an Occupy Earth group that were getting ready to go down to protest and in Tampa, and then of course everybody saw. Actually, it was the military and the police that were there, and people have pulled away from protesting because of the threat of brutalization again in jail.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's
very difficult right now. I'm wondering if anybody will show up at the Democratic convention because there's plenty there to protest with this too. I mean,
sure, that will be interesting, and we'll know in the next day or two. That's for sure.
Julia, do you have any idea how many places people have been fighting? I mean, even on the reservations through the Dakotas, the grandmothers got out there and stopped the tar sands, the Trans-Canada trucks that were bringing, pipeline equipment to building, for building equipment. They because it costs them so much to run the state roads, and they thought they'd cheat their way through by using the reservations roads. And the grandmothers got out there on the street to stop them, and the reservation police actually arrested the grandmothers.
Oh, no.
Is that right?
That's
I had heard about them taking, you know, easier routes to the reservations. I'd heard about that, but I did not know that in the end the bad guys were the brave grandmothers. You know, we had a blockade here in Texas last week in Livingston, Texas. There were 5 or 6 or 7, I can't remember the number, people who chained themselves to the underside of a Keystone XL a pipe truck and were there for hours and spent the night in jail. Brave souls to bring
courage.
Visibility to the issue. Absolutely, to bring visibility to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fighting the fight where I have a unique position here in the fight that I'm fighting. And then everybody else that's against this pipeline, you have to play to your strength. And people are doing whatever it takes, whatever
sure.
it takes.
Well, you've got to do whatever
no,
it takes.
No, I'm pretty well read, and I flash through, you know, like even USA Today most days, just cruise through. I never saw word of that. That's incredible news. People chaining themselves to it. Why didn't I hear about that?
Well, the press wants to pillory everybody as being, they want to marginalize people as being environmental extremists, when all they are is innocent, normal people just trying to protect their own land and their own resources from outside invasion. And, you know, it's a battle of perception, and the corporate media is taking the upper hand and the wrong hand by ignoring a lot of this important news.
Well, I think they had hoped to have better press coverage on this blockade action, mm-hmm. And I think what happened was perhaps that the actual event happened inside the fence of the TransCanada facility, and the press
sure.
was not allowed in there. But if you guys Google Livingston, Texas, and Keystone, and uh-huh. I don't know, handcuffed or chained, there were some amazing pictures of these people
okay.
chained to these vehicles. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I'll do that.
Yeah. Well, the majority, like the Klein piece we played, says, you know, the majority of Canadians don't want the XL pipeline either. There's over at Roundtree 7, Mike Stimson, who's a member of our team, is a Canadian writer, and he's written against it, showing it for what it is. They're really, I think the majority of folks understand that tar sands is something a lot different than it's like. There are a lot of different issues to look at as far as the health of the environment and people and the extraction of energy from the earth right now. And tar sands is big up there on dirty and too costly and environmentally destructive in a very fast way.
And I have just been, it's been overwhelming, the number of donations and even just cards that have come to me from Canadians, and they say pretty much what you just said, Gwen, that we, most Canadians, support what you're doing, or we support your position that this is not a pipeline that's needed. This is an extraction that's like Naomi said, ravaging the earth. Mm-hmm. It is endangering our waterways. It's endangering our way of life. Mm-hmm. But the Canadians, they don't want it. They don't want the pipeline built across their country. So then they're going to try to come across ours, and they certainly are sympathetic to our position, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
It's stark, but it's true. And Janelle Green has just jumped into our chat room, and she says that 4 barrels of pure water are used to process 1 barrel of oil. Tar sands is the most dirty to and destructive to the planet right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and that water, I understand, is not, you can't reclaim that water. It is just,
it's polluted.
Terrible.
You know?
And
yeah.
then you have to, how do you take care of that's not gray water. That's poisoned water then.
Mm-hmm.
How do
right.
you take care of that? It's difficult to understand the concept of this in a real nature, because here you have a lady who's out in Texas. Her land is under question to get this, the position that Julia's in. And she's a farmer. She's raising crops or cattle. Or you farm your land for what, Julia?
Well, the three crops that we farm are soybeans, wheat, and corn. Those are the main products that we're growing on the farm. And then we do have some cattle. Absolutely, we irrigate, you know, out of the creek.
Mm-hmm.
We have water rights given to us by the state,
mm-hmm.
And TransCanada intends to horizontally drill their pipeline under this creek up into our pasture. So
mm-hmm.
our land and our water is being threatened.
And, you know, we're on the precipice of a worldwide water shortage. Even though we have, you know, billions of gallons of it in the oceans, it's not saleable. I mean,
desalinization is going on in several countries right now, including the
right.
United States. They're doing it in California, as a matter of fact.
Well, it has to happen, exactly. But, I mean, we're on the precipice of a freshwater shortage, and here they want to take a very wasteful procedure and institute it across the United States and Canada. I'm sorry. That's just, on the face of that alone, it's a bad situation.
It really is.
I'm unable to find one on the plus side of the ledger why this pipeline should be built. I mean, there's too many threats to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
There's too many rights that are being stolen from landowners like myself.
Mm-hmm.
And TransCanada talks about the jobs. They also talk about that what they're doing is helping the United States create energy independence. Well, it's our understanding that the bulk or perhaps a great deal of this product that's going to be shipped to Houston will then go outside the country and
mm-hmm.
may not even wind up in our gas tanks.
Yeah,
that was part of our position in court is because there's a case in Texas. The Texas Supreme Court ruled last year in a case called Denbury Green versus
mm-hmm.
Texas rice farmer. And in that case, the Texas Supreme Court says that this process of going to the Railroad Commission, asking for a form and checking a box, that there are not enough, no one's vetting the process. So that when challenged by a landowner, the burden of proof falls on the pipeline to prove they're a common carrier. So when we were in court, we said, TransCanada, prove to us that you're a common carrier. And
mm-hmm.
and strangely enough, one of their pushbacks was, well, what you've asked for, it's called a tariff schedule. It's basically what they're going to charge. They said, we won't even have that to present until after the pipeline is built and product is being moved. So here's that circle. Proof that they can take the land isn't going to be available until after they take it.
Yeah,
and it's like no one's going to step up and go. Yeah.
Something radically wrong with that prescription. That's just not right.
Well,
it's
being bullied through, no doubt. And at the same time, addition to the XL, on the 30th, that would have been Thursday, the Obama administration issued a decision to let Shell drill in the Arctic waters for oil off the Alaskan coast. And that's pretty
nasty.
Bad. Nasty. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your crab population. See you later. You know, not good.
It's just where is it? And there's also the side that folks will say that green energy and that industry, some folks will say, is another corporate kind of overbearing delusion about just extracting more raw resources instead of taking elemental resources. But we really do have to consider, I mean, look at Julia, you live on the land, you work with the land, and the land provides and you provide for you steward the land.
Uh-huh.
Is it feasible for us to continue to use these environmentally, destructive energy sources and consider that the land isn't going to pay the price and that humanity is going to be ultimately poisoned by the whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a very there are parts of this decision that are very difficult because my tractor runs on diesel fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're not those of us who are pushing back on the pipeline aren't necessarily saying that tomorrow we can completely get off of energy, you know, petroleum-based products as fuel sources. What
mm-hmm.
we're saying is that there we need to at least give credit and time and money and research R&D monies to these other processes that can work. And it's a
mm-hmm.
it's a continuum. It's not a, and that's the pushback I get. Someone says, "Well, you're fighting this pipeline. I hope your car runs on, you know, solar." Well, no, it doesn't. But let's at least allocate monies toward future industries. The oil
exactly.
business is a dying
exactly.
business.
Exactly.
It's a dying
yeah.
business. So
why
aren't we investing money
all the time? They always want to say, "Oh, well, if you're not for us, you're against us. Or if you're not for this, you're against that." No, they want to take the easy way out all the time, and that's the wrong way to go about it.
Well, we have a caller who's called in, and from the 720 area code, I imagine it's someone from our chat room. Who's on the line?
Hi,
hello.
Janelle.
Hi. Janelle Green, welcome to the Sunday show.
Hi, Janelle.
Thank you. Sorry, I missed a little bit of it.
We've been talking, you've been listening for a while and talking about, I noticed that you were writing a lot of things too fast in the chat for me to explain, and why don't you give a good idea of what you realize about what's going on with the XL and tar sands situation?
Well, I wish I would have come on earlier because it sounds like a really interesting and constructive conversation you're having. So I apologize that I wasn't here sooner because, you know, you may have already touched on anything that I might have to offer because you were talking. And can you tell me our guest again? Because
Julia Trigg Crawford is our guest today, and we're talking about her fight, legal battle with TransCanada and Eminent Domain on her land.
Okay, wow. That is a worthwhile fight. And you know, Gwen, you and I have been talking about this a lot lately. You know, when do we say, you know, I mean, we have to keep fighting no matter what. And the problem is that we're fighting against these folks that have already contracted this to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, you know, how much we can really do.
Well, Julia, give us again your Julia has just come out of court with a ruling from her hometown judge, and now, Julia, you're going forward to appeal to a Texarkana judge, or three judges, correct?
Right. We are in the Lamar County Court, which is the very first step we had to be in because it's the county where our land was condemned, so that's where we had to push back on that. You know, they ruled, the judge here ruled that TransCanada is a common carrier, that because they're a common carrier and are building a pipeline that can be used by other entities to transport their products, that they do have the right of eminent domain. And our position is, because common carrier is a rubber stamp, you can't be, there's no way that there's no differentiation between a common carrier and someone who's building it for themselves. So we're hopeful that at the appellate court that there will be a much more thorough look at the case, and that those judges will adhere to the most recent ruling by the Texas Supreme Court that the burden of proof is not on me as a landowner. The burden of proof is on the pipeline to come to the table with the facts that show they qualify. Mm-hmm. And when we asked for that in the lower court, there was really nothing on the table that was brought by TransCanada. So we want them to have to come to table with the data that we don't think exists, frankly.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
Probably doesn't. I think you're right. It probably doesn't. It's just that they have just, you know, planned this out, not caring about any of that because the law doesn't apply to them.
Well, you made a good point, Janelle, that TransCanada has some they've signed on to get this product to refineries in Texas, and the refineries are sitting there thrumming their fingers on the table saying, you told us it would be here in 2011. And then I'm sure there are people who wanted to buy the product out of the states who are drumming their fingers on the table saying, where is it? So to me, it's fascinating that in a business situation, TransCanada appears to have made promises on delivery for something that they didn't even have permits for until they just got their water permits 3 weeks ago.
They do that in contracting and stuff all the time. They promise stuff that they can't deliver, and they do it willingly and knowingly, just hoping that things will work out. You know, it's a fairly common practice, unfortunately.
I think you're right, Jack, and they do that. and they'll do it unless there's a complaint.
Right.
And they,
exactly.
they won't do any action until there's a complaint, and then it'll be retroactively, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're back
to
the question.
That's usually the way it works. But let's hope that this three-man panel, this three-judge panel, will look at it very actively and very thoroughly and come up with a good solution to the problem here, because that first judge really dropped the ball. I mean, he just let things ride, boom, you know. He didn't look into it enough at all, not even closely enough.
Well, and let me share with you guys. I mean, I think we've hit the nail on the head. This was probably a decision that was way above anything he was prepared to deal with. He even started one of our hearings by stating from the bench, "I never want to hear the word pipeline again."
Oh.
That was to the audience in the courtroom. I mean, because this, you know, this is a decision and an issue that was. He's usually in there probably doing.
What does he want to? What does he want to cherry pick his cases?
I don't know, because you know what? I'm a competitive enough person that if I get a chance to play in the big leagues, I'm going to give it my absolute best game.
Absolutely,
okay?
Good for you.
Could have been a chance for a judge to make himself known as being, man, this guy is good. This guy took this on.
He wants to take the easy way out and be the big fish in a small pond. That's what he wants to do, and that's a very lax and lazy approach to his term as a judge. But that's neither here nor there. It's a reality that he made a bad decision, an ill-founded decision, and now the next step is to kick it upward, and hopefully they'll come up with a much more beneficial and broadly based decision that will, be precedent-setting.
Service community instead of the corporation, basically.
Right.
But Julia, let me ask you, in all of this, you apparently now, with appeal, how do you go about this process? How will it work out for you in the next few weeks or months? Will TransCanada be able to, if you're under appeal, will they be able to take any motion or make any motion on your land, or is that held back?
No, I think that's actually one of these head scratchers, Gwen, is that I think because the appeal process could be months in the making, and because they've already broken ground on this pipeline in Northeast Texas within a couple of counties of where I am, they could swoop in, build the pipeline across my place while we're still in court. That's my understanding. The judge granted them the writ of possession. Get this. The judge granted the writ of possession and had it served on us the day before the judge's ruling came out.
Yeah,
so the writ of possession was given to TransCanada before the ruling was even out. But I think there is a chance that they could be constructing in my property while we're still in appeal. And should we prevail, and I hope we do, they would have to pull it out.
Well, that's exactly what I hope happens, you know.
I do too. That would be certainly precedent setting right there.
Yeah, right.
And is there any vibration? Your nerves must be in a ball. I mean,
the nervous part was probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, coming down to the final days on this hearing. And it has been very stressful. And this is an all-consuming battle. It is me fighting for this land and everything that our families, you know, invested in it emotionally and financially. But when on those days when I feel like I cannot fight a multi-billion-dollar corporation one more day, I get a note from someone that says, "Thank you for what you're doing. You're fighting for all of us." You know, it becomes something that I feel like it's almost my responsibility as American to do this. If I'm out front catching all the arrows, that's fine. But this has become a bigger issue than just the Crawfords. And I'm frankly very honored, and I feel like a patriot to be able to do something like this.
I would do the same thing. And we talk about this a lot. You know, when we're faced with this, for you, it's life and death. That's your land, and this is what's happened to people. You know, since the settlers came to this continent, but I'm wondering, have you mentioned eminent domain in this conversation?
Oh, yes.
Well, that's
absolutely.
Okay, I missed that, so I just wanted to see.
That's what happened, actually, Janelle,
yeah.
What they
that's
were
kind
given.
Of the basis for it right now. The decision against her has been kind of based on that concept, which we all agree, at least on our side of the fence here, is just preposterous, but it's nonetheless a reality.
Well,
you have a lot of support, Julia.
You
have a lot. You have ours, and you have so much. I do see your name here and there. People know what's going on, and I admire your stance and your absolute integrity to go through with this. Tell me, do you have the commitment of your attorney, and can your attorney find what she or he needs to handle the process as it goes on?
She can. We have this wonderful attorney out of the Dallas area. Her name is Wendy Hammond. She's an environmental attorney by training, but she believes in what we're doing, and we've become this unbelievable partnership, and she's in it the same way that we're in it for all the right reasons, knowing full well it's a very unbalanced process. I mean, Lady Justice is not equal, because when money and power can tip the scales toward those who have those things, you know, it's one attorney, and I'm basically acting as a clerk and a courier and a secretary on our side, so it's my attorney and I versus an entire team, an endless team of attorneys in black suits and, you know, carrying suitcases on TransCanada's side. So,
well,
we are scrappers.
You are scrappers, and we applaud you for that, and we encourage you to keep it up. But what you have on your side is on one hand, you've got what seemingly are insurmountable odds, a whole team of corporate attorneys, you know, determined to defeat you. But on the other hand, you've got these three judges you have to convince, which if it's a legitimate case, and I believe it is, the law should take precedence over all these other attorneys' attempts to dissuade them.
Well, we're certainly hopeful that when the truth gets put out there on the table, it'll be you know, bright and shining. And I think I said earlier, you know, my family cannot afford this case. We cannot afford to fight this case. So this is being funded by people who are donating to our legal defense fund. Can I tell?
You know,
can I give you the name
on,
of my legal defense fund?
You may end
Julia,
up with more allies.
That,
I hope you do,
they
will help too.
Could you please give us all of the information on how people can help you right now?
Yes.
Absolutely. We have a website, standwithjulia.com. Pretty easy, standwithjulia.com. And if you'll go there, it has updates on the case. It has a way that you can donate by sending a check, or you can go to a PayPal account. But, people are sending us $5 or $1 or $10 or $20, and collectively those monies are allowing us to move up the food chain. And you know what, guys?
Right.
We are willing to go all the way to the Texas Supreme Court if we have to and if we have the money, because we feel it is that important of a case.
Oh, it is, no doubt about it. And let us hope that your fundraising is successful. And the point I was trying to make earlier, we're almost out of time here, but I think as time goes on, and if your persistence is strong and you keep it up, you're going to find that you're going to be, it's like a snowball going up a hill or down a hill. You're going to add on more and more and more supporters across the entire country. And I think
we've already seen that, because
right.
just from the ruling, people are saying a 15-word ruling sent from an iPhone, your case deserves more respect than that.
Exactly.
Keep going.
Disrespectful.
You know. Yeah.
Exactly. Good. Yeah. Well, you're going to have a lot of this coming your way, and that's going to help you and bolster your drive to be successful in this case.
Well, we hope so. Thank you, Jack.
Thank
Julia,
you. Julia,
the Sunday show on Here Be Monsters is sponsored by Roundtree7, the number 7.com, and it's it's a blog of political commentary and revolt, I suppose. But I'm going to get a post up over there. Perhaps you'll help me out with it, too. And we'll get your information going out in as many directions as we have. Even Jack has the Saturday afternoon post to work with, too.
Right, exactly.
Oh, thank you all for helping us spread that word.
This next week I will help spread the word, too. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jack.
And I'd like, if it's okay, too, Julie, I've got your website up. And I'd actually like to communicate this to Deep Green Resistance because they've been pretty successful with their activism. I don't know if you know much about them, but I'd be happy to communicate this to them as well.
Who is that, Janelle? What group?
Deep Green Resistance.
Okay, sure. Feel free to get a hold of me and we can talk about it some more.
See that snowball going down the hill is getting bigger and bigger.
I feel it. I feel it. Yeah.
It's getting bigger right now as we speak.
Yeah, I'll help in however I can.
Thanks, Janelle.
Julia, just want to let you know that you've got our support. I'm also going to, with your permission, give your information to Progressive News Network and Rick Spezak because he's got a large audience, and hey, you should really talk with him to do his show.
Great. Well, have him contact me, Gwen.
I absolutely will. I want to thank Janelle for stopping in with us today. That's a first. She's generally around, smart gal, and she's very committed. And Julia, we're out of time. We're at the end of the hour.
Wow.
And
where did it go?
I just want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. And I hope you will continue to do so. And we're going to keep our eyes and ears open. And anything that we can do from this end, please just send it our way, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I will. And I hope that the next time we get together, we'll be talking about a victory in court.
I hope so, too, by golly. That's a great idea. I'm all for that, and we'll work real hard to help you achieve that. That sounds great.
Thank you, Jack.
Julia, thank you very much for sharing your story, and it'll be beneficial eventually. I'm confident of that.
The truth wins out at some point.
Yes.
Thank you, and everybody have a wonderful holiday weekend, the rest of it.
Everybody, yeah, that definitely.
Labor
no doubt
Day
about it. Happy
there
Labor
in
Day.
Texas.
Yes. Great, and thanks to Janelle and Gwen as well for sponsoring this information today and putting it forth like you have, as well as Julia's important information. We've got to resist this.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack, as always, thanks for being with me today. Julia, thank you for your attendance. And everybody out there, I hope you can remember tomorrow all of those folks in your community who present as labor and the unions. I mean, you know, come on. And a happy and safe Labor Day to you. Remember, there's a lot coming up this week, so next week we'll be here with more, okay?
That's right. Sounds good. And thank you, everybody, for your listening and for your presentations and for your fight. We need to keep fighting. That's what we got to do.
Well, that's the truth, isn't it?
No doubt.
Now, everybody, don't forget, next up, 7 p.m., Progressive News Network with Rick Spezak here on Blog Talk Radio. Go find him. Go listen to him. He's got some good stuff. He's not really going to just talk to a step stool today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Anyways, that's our show, folks. Thank you for being with us, and I'm Gwen Berry in South Florida. We've had Julia Trigg Crawford from Texas with us, and out of Minnesota we had Jack Jodell. Everybody have a safe and happy week, if you can.
Same to you.
Okay.
Same to you, and we'll see you next week. We'll talk to you then, everybody. Have a great week.
Good night.
Okay, good night.